Today on Black Twitter Talk, we are talking the Charlotte Uprising, Baltimore schools use meditation, and how to deal with Black trauma. Stay tuned. So fitting, like Mother Badu is just classic.
Just say yes,
hey guys, I'm your host Angie Skates. You can find me on Twitter at @Angie_Skates and on the gram at @Big_Ange.
What's up, everybody? I'm your co-host Kelly Skates. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at @TheUrbanGypsyLA.
Today's is a tough show for us.
It really is.
It is. It's kind of heavy. This song is befitting just of the mood of, you know, where we are. And I feel like where the community is all together. When I say community, of course, I mean the Black community.
Right.
If you guys have been hiding under a rock, then you may not have heard of what's going on in Charlotte. But there is a hashtag on Twitter, Charlotte Uprising, that talks about, or that's dealing with, what's currently happening there. If you haven't heard, there was another state-sanctioned murder at the hands of the police. Keith Lamont Scott, 43 years old. He was husband to Rekia Scott. They had 7 children together. Was shot down by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. And it started a protest.
Yes.
You know,
the protest started because they wouldn't release the footage, right?
They wouldn't release the body cam footage nor the dash cam footage. So they started protesting. It was a peaceful protest. Eventually, it's 6 days strong now, and they are still marching right now today as we speak. Initially, what happened was there was eyewitness account of Keith Lamont, and they were saying that he was in his vehicle reading a book, which he does every day, waiting for his son to get home from school or to get off the bus so that he can walk him home. Or, you know, I guess they were in front of their complex, so the school bus drops them off. Anyway, this particular time, there were undercover police there, and they shot him. And there's conflicting statements, which it always is when it comes to the police narrative around shootings like this. They were saying that he had marijuana and that he had a gun. And eyewitnesses were saying that, no, he had a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would any dad be waiting at the bus stop with marijuana and a gun for his child to come home from school? Later, we find out that the wife was there on the scene, and she actually had cell phone footage. Mm-hmm. And we saw that video where she's constantly saying he doesn't have a gun. She even goes as far to say that he has TBI, which is traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
And the police ignore her, and they're constantly shouting, oh, drop the gun, drop the gun. He doesn't have a gun. He doesn't have a gun. He just took his medication. He suffers from TBI. And right around the time where the shooting actually happens, I guess she drops her cell phone, so we don't get a real clear shot of it from her perspective. But CMPD did release partial footage from mm-hmm. the dash cam and the body cam, and we can see just enough to see that he didn't brandish anything. His hands were at his side.
Just talking about it, I'm getting hot in here.
It is really hot in here. This is a tough thing to cover, but I feel like we have to. I feel like we have accountability, not only to our viewers, but to ourselves. And we got to talk about it. So, since they started protesting, there has been like partial footage released, but and even in some of the videos that we see, it looks like they're saying, first of all, that there was a Black officer that did the shooting. In the videos that we saw, there was no Black officer that was doing the shooting. Also, they were saying that he had a gun. In the video that we saw, we didn't see him have a gun. We also suspect that the police planted evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And in the video, we saw what looks like there was evidence planted. It looks like there is a plainclothes cop that does drop a gun at the scene.
Oh, we see that.
Oh, we see that.
Because I honestly couldn't watch the video. I can't watch these videos at all anymore. So I do read about it and I do like look at the pictures and everything, but actually watching it is too much for me at this point. So I kind of like go off everybody's words, and I'm more so will watch like the uprising and follow that. So during the uprising, during the uprising, one of the people I follow on Twitter, Awkward Duck, I love her. She's just really dope and very in tune with everything that's going on. And she was out there and she was documenting it and talking about like how when the police came and the SWAT team and everything, they tried to barricade the protesters and like basically block them off. And then she has like live video footage of people moving the barricades, and they're big, heavy, like those big wide things. So they're like moving them, marching it.
Yeah.
And they end up closing off of a freeway to keep more SWAT team and more people from coming in. So that was just powerful to see that. And then she tweets stuff like Ferguson taught us. So, you know, they do the tear gas and all that stuff. So, you know, they were just tweeting about sending milk and sending other different supplies like gas masks and stuff so they could be prepared for what they're going to do to them when all they're really trying to do is peacefully protest. But they know that they're going to incite more.
It's a state of emergency in North Carolina right now. The National Guard has been deployed, and we've all seen the militarization of local police departments, which is happening right now. But one other death occurred in the midst of all of the protesting, Justin Carr. And a lot of eyewitnesses are saying that it happened at the hands of the police. They were shooting rubber bullets and throwing tear gas directly into the crowd. And instantaneous, once this happened, Justin Carr fell to the ground. But of course, CMPD are saying otherwise. They actually arrested a civilian for this murder. Justin Carr, I think he was 26 years old. And prior to him going to the protest, he had a conversation with his mother saying that he wanted to get out and get active and help. And he ended up dying. And there were eyewitnesses that were standing right next to Justin. And who were saying that as soon as the police started to shoot rubber bullets and do the tear gas, that he fell. It's impossible. And they were trying to blame it on gang violence, which is ridiculous. So, I mean,
it's like, where'd the gang violence come from? Like, everybody out here is on the same side except for some of the policemen. I'm not going to say all of them, but some of them
enough
are not.
Of them are.
So it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Gang violence. Like, nobody's worried about gangs right now.
And that's another thing that I want to bring into the conversation is the myth of black on black crime. A lot of people are saying that we're killing each other, so how dare we say Black Lives Matter?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, black on black crime is a myth. It is scientifically proven that people kill or are violent against people that are closest to them. And white people commit violent acts against other white people. Black people commit violent acts against other white people. I mean, black people. And because white people are the majority population in the U.S., they commit 84% of the murders.
Mm-hmm.
White people kill more whites than black people kill each other. Again, like I said, whites are the largest demographic in the U.S., so naturally they commit more crimes. But in relation to gang murders, there are 53% of the victims from gang violence are white, whereas 42% are black. 56% of the perpetrators that commit gang violence are white, whereas only 40% of them are black. So all of your black-on-black jargon or whatever it is that you're trying to put into this conversation, you can keep it.
Well, my thing is to, even without going heavily into the stats, is okay, clearly we do have heavy crime rate against each other in our communities too, like Chicago, for example, or maybe Detroit or whatever, but a lot of that has to do with the systematic racism that's in place. Like, if we had better education system, if we had jobs and stuff, then we wouldn't do that. But people are literally out here hungry, literally hungry out here. And I think people sleep on that. And
People also sleep on the fact that there are people in the community that organize and work against so-called black-on-black crime, gang violence.
Just as much, yeah.
Just as much as it occurs. And mainstream media doesn't shed a light on that, so we don't get to hear that side of the story. There are just as many people in Chicago on the ground that are creating opportunities for impoverished youth, creating educational opportunities, job opportunities, giving these kids resources so that they can have something else to look forward to. And nobody talks about that,
right,
though.
And it's like, okay, we have a problem here and a problem here. Does that mean that this problem doesn't deserve any light and attention just because this one happens to be another issue? Like, yeah, okay, we have that too. What does that have to do with what's happening right now today?
All of humankind has that issue. One thing that I think is reminiscent of, you know, the civil rights movement is the fact that the Charlotte protesters actually have a list of demands. And it kind of reminds me of the 10-point platform of the Black Panther Party. And I'm not going to read all 10 of the points. I'll read a couple just so that you can get an idea as to the kinds of things that they are demanding. And there is an opportunity for you to go online and sign the petition. Just Google Charlotte Uprising List of Demands and you'll be able to find the petition and sign it. I did. If you haven't done so already, you should do it. So some of the things that they're demanding is the immediate end to the state of emergency, curfew, and the removal of the National Guard from the city. I think that's a reasonable request, seeing as though they have incited all of the violence that has happened since the Charlotte Uprising. They are requesting the immediate demilitarization of the police department and the immediate return of all military equipment, which is, again, reasonable.
Right.
Like, we don't need the military in our communities. Stop killing us.
Right.
It's that simple. This one is, they're calling for the defunding of the police department. Which in 2017, the budget for the police department in Charlotte is $246,644,617. And they're asking for the redirection of those resources to the needs of the communities, including resources for jobs, programs, affordable quality housing, transportation, holistic health, and quality schools. Which to me is not an unreasonable demand.
And I love
either.
That they put the demands, because people are always steadily saying, well, if they don't have demands, they're not clear on what they want. They're just a bunch of people gathering with no goals. Those are very clear and they're all understandable.
And you have an opportunity to, again, go sign the petition. One more. To end the repression and targeting of protesters and all those engaged in the Charlotte Uprising. We know that when events like this occur and we're frustrated and we take to the streets in our peaceful protest, we're targeted. We, you know, the militarized police, they incite violent acts against us and we're retaliating in defense of ourselves. That needs to stop. And I only read 4 of the 10 points. I encourage you again, I implore you to go look at it. But this all happened on the heels of the Terrence Crutcher murder. And I just feel like we're seeing more and more of these happen in waves of two. Last time it was Philando Castile.
And Alton Sterling.
And like this month it's two. And then the Justin Carr murder on top of that. It's just so
it's
much.
It's almost as if they're like, and I'm generalizing, they already have the fear of us for whatever reason. It's almost like the fear is growing because they know, a lot of them know that they're in the wrong. So it's like they're even more scared or something.
I don't even think the fear is growing. I think this has been a problem that has been prevalent in the Black community since we were forcibly made to come here.
Sure.
I think in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, however long ago it was lynchings. You know, and people would gather in the park, you know, with their kids and have picnics while we hang from the poplar trees. You know what I'm saying? And I just think that it's not the violent that's different. Well, maybe the digital medium is different. And we're not getting hung this time. We're getting shot dead in the streets. But it's the fact they're being captured digitally. That's what's different. This is not news to us. This kind of stuff has been happening since we've been in this country, and it continues to happen and it needs to stop. And I just think that's the dividing factor. The thing that makes it news is it's the viral, the digital content of it. It's being captured. That's all. It's tough. It's tough to deal with. Terrence Crutcher, he was 40 years old, and he was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This happened. His car stopped. He was in distress. He needed help. The police came, and instead of helping him, they killed him. In this case, it was a woman officer, Betty Shelby. And you can even hear the helicopter news commentator saying, oh, he looks like a bad dude. What constitutes a bad looking dude? His melanated skin? Like, I feel like our skin, we're criminalized for being black.
I'm quiet.
You can't be quiet.
I'm trying not to be, but I'm also trying not to get emotional, so.
Okay, so they are trying to justify. Okay, so Betty Shelby, she was actually charged with manslaughter, first degree manslaughter, and she was released on $500,000 bail.
Do you find it interesting that the first one that they like charge right away is a woman?
I thought it was interesting, and a couple of people may mention to it, but she's not the first one that was actually charged. In the Freddie Gray case, Marilyn Mosby brought charges against a female officer who was involved in that, and she happened to be a black woman, even though the charges went away. I think it is.
But Marilyn Mosby was a different scenario, too. Like, yeah, she went in on a whole different level.
She did, and she was not successful, unfortunately. But I do think it's interesting that she was charged so quickly.
So quickly, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that we're not used to seeing. And it was first-degree manslaughter. Like, what constitutes manslaughter over first-degree murder? That's a whole nother question.
Right.
But they're trying to justify that murder by saying he was on PCP.
Was that have to do anything? He wasn't attacking anybody.
His hands were up. They were saying he was reaching into the vehicle. The window was up. He wasn't reaching into anything. He was complying, and he still got shot. We can't read books. We can't help our autistic patients. We can't smoke
breathe.
A cigarette. We can't sell cigarettes. We can't sell CDs. We can't be black in America without being criminalized.
So Steve Harvey talks on his show about how he teaches his son what to do when he gets pulled over. And he has this whole video where he's like, you put your hands on the steering wheel at 10
your
and
wrists
2.
Are up.
Keep your fingers spread. And like, it's very detailed. And I watched that video and I'm looking like, I don't know. It broke my heart to see that it's 2016 and we have to do this. And even in doing this, there's no guarantee that
you won't we,
because like Philando Castile, he wasn't like doing the extras. He was like just sitting there.
I have a permit, and they still killed him.
And they still killed him. So it's like, you could still do that, and hopefully that's basically what Steve is saying. Like, hopefully you can come back home after full compliance and acting like a slave, so to speak.
I mean, if you're that lucky to get an officer to pull you over in a routine traffic stop. I remember one time, it was the middle of the summer in July, I can't recall the year, but I was sitting outside of a friend's house with another friend in the truck, and we were waiting for him to come outside of the house, and I reach into my bag to put my lip gloss on, and I pull the visor down to do, you know, that thing, that primping thing that we do in the mirror, and I can look, I saw in the mirror that we were surrounded by police, and they had their guns drawn, and not like their handguns, they had like AK-47s drawn at the car, and before I can even utter a word, I'm being pulled out of the car with the gun to the back of my head. Now I'm face down in the dirt. I have on a beautiful red dress, wedges, like I'm dressed to the T, like I'm fly. My face is down in the dirt. I have a police boot on the back of my neck, and it's like I didn't have an opportunity to say, to do anything. And if it weren't for the community to come out, first of all, the cops said the reason why they came at us the way that they did is because a neighbor called and reported guns and drugs. Well, it was the neighborhood, it was the community, it was the people that lived and saw what was happening that came out, and I feel like saved my life in that moment.
Right.
So that was bull crap, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And it's just like, it's open season on black people. It doesn't matter if you're educated, it doesn't matter if you have power, it doesn't matter if you have status, it doesn't matter. Like, the common denominator is the melanated skin, point blank in the period, and we mm-hmm. are under attack.
Right. So, some Twitter comments. Oh, this show is difficult. Some Twitter comments were, nothing changed. They just traded in the noose for a Glock 22. Somebody else said, my people really out here getting exterminated. Can't even have car trouble. So, we can't read books without being shot either. And someone else said, please understand that we are watching supremacy morph right before our eyes.
White supremacy.
that's not what this is. But yeah, we're watching white supremacy morph before our eyes. It is reshaping itself to maintain power right now.
So my question to you and our viewers, and even to you, Kelly, is like, how do you deal with all of this? Like, there's scientific fact that Black people are suffering from PTSD and Black trauma based on the amount, the volume of Black bodies that we're seeing being murdered, go viral, like, constant, on loop. And not just being murdered, being raped, being brutalized. Like, it's on constant rotation, and it affects us all.
Number one, I can't watch another video. I haven't watched videos since we saw the little Black girl get abused at the pool
in
party.
The bikini?
Yeah, after that one, like, just the thought of it, like, I can't do it. And even reading the transcripts of what happened and having a conversation about it, if I get into it too much, I get emotional because I haven't recovered.
But I feel like as a journalist, as someone that does occupy this platform, we have an unspoken obligation to do this, to review these videos, to do the investigative journalism work, and to bring these stories to light. And it's just like, I'm having a hard time, like, compartmentalizing or, like, even dealing with this in my other, you know, things that I have to do on the day-to-day, and it's manifesting in my body. I was at work the other day. For the last few weeks, I've had symptoms of stress and anxiety manifest in my body. It's like heart palpitations, like just irregular heartbeats. I'm like going dizzy, seeing spots, and it's just like, and I'm having to constantly just leave, and my employer is starting to ask questions like, what's going on? And I'm being pulled into meetings with HR and stuff, and it's just like, I don't feel comfortable telling you that I'm suffering from Black trauma right now. I don't feel comfortable telling you, disclosing that I have PTSD from, you know, being in fear of my own life being taken or being brutalized, or watching
family or
family, or watching other people go through these experiences.
Because literally, we can't drive down the street and then the police is driving down the same street without it becoming like, oh, okay, in my street. You know, you're not doing anything wrong, but you're just hoping that nothing is wrong with your car, no tail lights out. Maybe you didn't roll through that stop sign a little too soon because you do not want to get pulled over. Like, who wants to live like that?
How
can you live like that?
You can't. It's dehumanizing. And
they want us, you know, try to pigeonhole us and say, oh, you're an angry Black woman, or we're this or that because we talk about it, or because we're passionate about it, because it's our life. Like, we have to live this.
We are literally fighting for our lives out here in these streets, and we have to come into this office and talk about things that are non-factors. Like, seriously, it does not matter. Nothing matters except the fight for my life. And I feel like we're losing, quite frankly. But like, when you're in spaces like that, like, how, when you're depressed, I can't eat sometimes, I can't sleep sometimes. Like, it's really difficult to navigate. And one of the things that I do it's this show, which does help. It's kind of therapeutic for it. But meditation works, too. Mm-hmm. Mindful meditation. It does help me bring myself back to that center of calmness so that I am able to function and, you know, do other things. And that's one thing that Baltimore schools are starting to implement for its children. It's actually one school in Baltimore, the Robert W. Coleman Elementary School. Instead of detention, what they're doing is offering their students mindful meditation practices like yoga and mindful meditation. Instead of having a classroom with desk and, you know, just for detention, they have meditation rooms where they have pillows and lamps, and it gives students a whole different feeling. And
which I think is amazing, especially everything that has happened in Baltimore. It's like, if you have some kids acting out, I love the fact that they're not just gonna say, okay, we'll go over there and sit in a room and we're not gonna address it. Like, these kids are going through trauma as well, and they need time and space to facilitate those thoughts and understand what's
because
going on with
real.
Them. They are real, and it will have a lasting effect on everybody in the community, and the children are what's most important.
For sure.
I just think it's interesting because we have so much research done on how racism affects us socially and financially, economically, and all these things, but we don't talk about the effect of it on our psyche.
our psyche. And it's even scientific studies that says that this trauma is passed down through our DNA. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're two generations, a generation and a half removed from chattel slavery. And it's just, like, it's crazy. If the DNA is passed down and then what I'm already experiencing in this world, you know, it's tough. And I think that it's important work that it's actually the Holistic Life Foundation. It's a local nonprofit that is doing this.
It's owned by three black men, I feel.
Yeah. And they've been doing this for 10 years. And even our sister, who's a yogi and into the holistic sciences and things like that, she teaches yoga to young inner city kids. And I think that's important that we offer them alternative methods of healing.
I mean, yoga, mindful meditation, it definitely works. I've had physical ailments before where I would go to the doctor back and forth, try all these different things and not know what is really wrong with me and be sick for like almost a month. And I remember going to our other sister, Stacy, who is a yogi and Ayurvedic dietitian and psychologist, like, she's really dope, you guys. I went to her and she did like a mindful meditation thing with me and had me imagine X, Y, and Z, and literally, I want to say in less than 24 hours, like, whatever was sick in me, I was able to pass through it.
So at these schools, what's happening is the suspension rates are dropping. Attendance is increased, and even the children are taking these practices back home, and they're seeing their parents, oh, so you're stressed, so let me teach you this breathing exercise mm-hmm. to help you breathe through this stress, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I don't know if it was you or if it was Stacy, your sister, when, you know, sometimes people like to smoke when they're stressed or whatever, like that becomes their habit. And I feel like she told me, it must be you, that, you know, really what it is the breathing.
Yeah,
like people don't realize.
The drag in the pool.
It's like the inhale and the exhale that's actually the power in the habit of smoking, not necessarily the tobacco or...
It's the breathing.
Yeah.
It's the life force. And sometimes we forget to do that in the midst of all of the chaos, but we can't. We have to persevere. We have to be consistent and we have to be persistent. If not for ourselves, then for our young ones that are coming up into this. It's important. It's important work that we're doing here. On a lighter note, kinda.
What?
Will Smith and Jay-Z.
Okay, so they're doing the movie about Emmett Till. I just wanted to talk about this because I'm just curious what your thought is. Like, that's such an old story, and I believe, like, okay, it's an important story, and there's relevance in it today, but I guess my question is, why Emmett Till opposed to a more current story?
I think, we ever seen the story of Emmett Till on the big screen?
Not in that format, probably just documentaries.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think with all of the controversies surrounding Nate Parker and Birth of a Nation and a historical film like that, I feel like Will Smith and Jay-Z, who have a history of...
I think it's important, definitely, to tell the history. I'm sorry to cut you off, but...
You're not. Sorry, not sorry.
I'm not.
Yeah, she get down.
Because I just remember when I went to go see Fruitvale Station, and because it was a more current story, like, how much that impacted me. So I wonder, like, I definitely think that the kids need to know the history or whatever, but is it as, you know, impactful to tell such an old story opposed to a current one?
They also did Fela. The Broadway musical, and that talks about a musician who was also an African activist, and regardless of how old the message is, apparently it's still relevant because we're still dealing with a lot of the same challenges that we dealt with during the civil rights history. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing has changed. Everything has changed, but nothing has changed. So I'm going to say, yes, this story is relevant. Are there other stories that are more modern and prevalent in our times? Yes. So I offer that up to you and I, who are content creators mm-hmm. and storytellers and filmmakers, to recreate stories that you'd like to see done. Mm-hmm. But Emmett Till absolutely is still relevant, for sure. Also, I wanted to talk about Mick Jenkins. Who is a rapper. He is from Alabama, but he grew up in Chicago. He just dropped his latest album. I think it is very smart. It's witty. It's intelligent. He sonically infuses futuristic sounds into his hip-hop style. But I think what is It's called The Healing Element, by the way. I think what is notable about him is that he wants to spread love in the fashion of Jesus Christ, because he's led by his faith. And what other mainstream rapper or hip-hop person, persona, whatever, is doing that? I can't think of one. Chance the Rapper. He was real gospel with it. Nick Jenkins gospel. Doesn't go all the way gospel, but his album, it's reminiscent of Lauryn Hill's The Miseducation, his skits and everything when they talk about love.
I appreciate that heavily, because we do need healing, and I'm not a hip hop head, and I feel like people would take my black card if they knew how little I know, like in depth, and how like passionate I am about hip hop. It's not that much, because I don't feel that I'm being respected in most of the songs, so I don't go that deep. So I love that now there are more rappers that talk about stuff or present their work in a way that I don't feel like I'm being disrespected in every song.
I feel like he's celebratory, not only to romantic love, but all kinds of love, brotherly, sisterly. And one of the things that I think it's striking for Mick Jenkins is that he constantly uses the metaphor of water. And it's something that's been consistent in all of his EPs. And I'm not a hip-hop head either, but I'm a music connoisseur. Music gives me life. Music is one of my healing tools. Literature also is another one of my healing tools. So I go, those are my go-tos. And Mick Jenkins, if you haven't heard his new album, you should definitely check it out.
It's kind of right on time, because we do need healing right now. We sure do. Sonically, it's all vibes. It's very, like, chill, mellow.
It is. And it's something for everybody on there. It's worth a listen, at least. I think that is all that we can handle for today. It's a lot. And, you know,
I had to wear my army fatigue today.
Because she's feeling like a soldier. We all soldiers out here, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just want to make sure that, you know, we are not only doing the work of the activists in the community, however that manifests in your life, but that we're also doing the healing part of it. That's important.
Yeah, I think it's important that everybody understand that everybody doesn't play the same role in this. Everybody's not going to be
on the ground protesting.
Yeah, there's going to be people who are back at the house that have the healing tools ready for when they come home from combat. There's going to be people there that's responsible for educating the kids while, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many roles to be played in this. Like, everybody still needs to show up and be present and
do your part.
Stay centered and aligned and do the work.
And don't be afraid to call in black.
Man, that tomorrow is supposed to be the day everybody's supposed to do it.
Isaiah Thomas posted it. He's never said much else about any of the issues surrounding the black community, really, to me and my knowledge. But he proposed on Facebook that we all call in sick. We don't spend any money. We don't patronize anybody in any way. And that's supposed to be tomorrow. So Google it, look into it.
Let us know if you're going to do it.
And also, we won't be here next week. We're going to be out of town, but we'll be back the following week. Make sure you check me at Twitter, at Angie_Skates.
Thanks for hanging in here with me today, because I know my mood's a little bit off. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Urban Gypsy LA.
We'll see y'all.
Peace
in a
out,
couple
you
weeks.
Guys. Stay good. Stay well.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christie, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.